On this week's episode of The Apex, we are joined by three times Masters historic Formula One champion and Goodwood lap record holder, Nick Padmore. Nick climbed the ranks of single-seater racing and excelled as a works driver in Radicals before becoming more involved in historic racing. Alongside his impressive resume, Nick is also one of the world's leading driver coaches and holds the unique ability to transfer his knowledge and experience to other drivers. He joins us today to discuss his career highlights, that iconic Goodwood lap record, and to share some of his coaching insights. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for getting in touch and inviting me, really. I haven't done too many of these, but as you can see, I'm not very well prepared with my iPad. That's about it. I always enjoy these because, you know, with me, it's what you see is what you get. So I'll give you all the gossip, all the behind-the-scenes stories and everything else. So, let's have a bit of fun and hopefully make it exciting for your listeners.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I've watched you for years racing at Goodwood, so I'm very keen to pick your brain. And, I'm just very grateful to have you on. So thank you.
Brilliant. Look forward to it.
I suppose your sort of start into motorsport, was it sort of related to your father racing classic minis? Is that kind of where it all began?
Yeah, that's where it all started, really. Dad has been racing since the 60s. So, I was always being, not dragged, because I actually was dragged, because at the beginning I was all about fishing. So Dad would go off racing and I'd go carp fishing. And I wasn't interested in motorsport at all. And then I can't remember the year, probably like 88, something like that. One of my neighbours had a cart in the garage. And I went over there one day and they opened the garage. And I was like, oh, God. Next day, all the fishing gear was up for sale. And I even still remember writing the advert out. It was so funny, the fishing gear. I sold the lot. And that was the start of, an amazing motorsport career and life and all my friends and family that were involved in it.
So where was your dad actually racing then? And those sort of your earliest motoring memories, I guess.
He was always mainly sort of Brands Hatch and Liddon Hill and like Silverstone, places like that, in a Mini Miglia, which, you know, we have one now. So it's something that I loved. I love the Mini scene, and I thought one day if I can actually buy one, I will. So, Luckily it all come together, really.
And I suppose having been around that environment, was a career in motorsport always the plan?
It was, yeah. We had no money, so we begged, borrowed, and stole. Thank you to everyone to get through it, just to get the wheels in motion. We had a village garage, and in Lye, Surrey, and it was very good because I used to serve fuel, so I used to go out to the customers and serve fuel. And behind the till, we'd have pictures of the cart or the Formula First, and that's how we raise sponsorship, because of course when they're paying, they're looking at the picture and the chats go, and that was it. So it was all about money, you know, how can we get the money to go racing? And I wanted to do this as a job, not Formula One, because we never had that money to get me that far. Anything else, really.
And so you sort of worked your way up through the junior formulas, is that right? It was sort of a Formula First, Formula Ford, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's correct. I did Formula First, and then that was for a few years, actually, because we didn't have enough money to do the whole season. So I'd just pick and choose the big meetings or the winter series. Yeah. I did a year in V6 Eurocar, which I do smile about that, because every time I smell gear oil, it just reminds me of that car and what a terrible year it was. But it's a learning curve. So, we did that. And we always ran the cars ourselves because it was a lot cheaper. And we always had something to sell at the end of that season to put the money into something else and go forward.
Nice. Yeah.
So V6 Eurocar, then Fiestas in 2000 on the touring car package, and a bit of Formula 4, Palm Rally, a bit of F3. And it's amazing when I think back, I've done a bit. I've done a few tracks.
I certainly have. But I think it was sort of more Radicals that is when your sort of motorsport career kind of, I don't know, took off. Is that the right word? Or you sort of...
Yeah, 100%. Phil Abbott and Mick Hyde gave me a massive opportunity. And they brought me in to look after their customers, so coach their customers. That's where it all started, sort of 2004, something like that. And then it was pairing me with the gentleman driver. So I'd coach him or her and then race with them as well. And I think I was with them for like six seasons. So all the Pro Sport, SR3, SR8 days. Yeah, and that was great. And that taught me so much, dealing with gent drivers and lady drivers in the series, and working with Phil Abbott and Mick Hyde. And, you know, Radicals are mega. They're very good.
Yeah, I mean, just for those who might not be fully aware, like, how do you describe what Radicals are? Like, what is the Radical series?
It's like a Le Mans car. It was always based, like, this is the Le Mans feeder series. So it's a Le Mans prototype with a motorcycle engine. I think now they've gone to like a Ford engine. But just a great car, a good endurance car. It would teach you so much about wings and slicks. And they're just run. Obviously, they're a few quid now. But they're just great fun. And also, you've got the passenger seat in most of these cars. So if you're brave enough, you get in the passenger seat and give some tips from the scary side, really. But yeah, that is, when I look back at that, they sounded fantastic. And really, the SR8, the very early SR8, just reminds me so much of, you know, when I'm driving historic Formula One cars now, that it's very similar. It moves around a lot, and loads of grip, loads of power, and it sounds the business. So yeah. I look back on those days, and certainly taught me so much.
Yeah, and you were doing that for, was it 6 years, I think, as a works driver?
Yeah,
and that was...
yeah, I think it was 6 or 7 years. And then after that, I went to V2V in Europe, which was like an LMP3 car without the roof on it, which massive. V2V, it ran for years, long distance races. And I shared with a good friend of mine who I still drive for now, and he actually owns the Arrows A11. It's Jean-Louis Rion. So that's how we first met, and we're still, you know, still racing together now. So he's not calling me yet. He hasn't got to as quick, so that's good.
Well, we'll certainly come on to the Arrows A11 a little bit later. But when did you make the transition to historic Formula 3? Was that after?
That was a big opportunity by Max Smith Hilliard. Again, one of my customers I've been coaching for years. He bought the car because he wanted to get used to single seaters. So he bought that car to get used to manual box and everything else from Radical, because that's what he did before. And then I think I first raced that March 783 in 2014, and it was so good. It was really, really good. No power, but loads of grip, which I do like cars to move around a little bit. So it was different, but I won a lot in that car, and it definitely helped me to, you know, get back into single seaters, because it had been a long time. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. And yeah, Max gave me some massive opportunities with that. And then the Williams FW05, which was the first Formula One car I raced at Spa.
And so that was your sort of foray into historic racing. That was kind of where that.
Yeah, Dad bought an FIA Mini Cooper S, and probably that's about 2008 or 9. And I think that was my first sort of race in that. And then I'd share a Lola T210 with Phil Hall, always at the Silverstone Classic and the Masters sports car race. And that's really, I think that was when it completely bit. So I was still doing V2V in Europe. That was coming to an end. And then the historics, just one or two races, then another one, then more coaching. And then, that's how it's sort of snowballed, really.
Yeah. The Masters historic series are absolutely incredible. And I think of all the championships that one could compete in, the historic Formula One championship is just extraordinary. And you've had a lot of experience in that championship. What was it like going into that championship? What were the cars like to drive? I mean, it just looks unbelievably cool.
My first race was at Spa in 2014 in the Williams FW05, the Walter Wolf car. And yeah, it's funny. When I look back at the photos of the cars I've driven 38 Formula One cars now from 1958 to 2005. It's mad. I look and think, Jesus, did I really drive that? But of course, when you're in the car, you're getting on with it. The adrenaline takes over, the buzz of everything. And to go out, I remember my first qualifying session in that Wolf was at Spa, and it had been torrential rain, and then it was drying. So I went out on slicks. Oh, Jesus, you know, Eau Rouge, greasy slicks. Yeah, great. Nice way to start. But that went very well, and I loved it. And that's a long time ago.
And I think, is it the level of racing in that series is insanely competitive. Like, this isn't just, you know, enjoying old cars. This is proper, you know, hardcore.
Yeah, like you know, the guys and girls who own these cars don't buy them just to drive around and look at me, I've got a Formula One car. You know, a good majority of them are fully lit. They're really, really pushing. And it's great because why not? They've got the cars there, they've got the great teams to run the cars. And yeah, it's close. Sometimes a little bit too close. A bit of wheel banging. I had some wheel banging at Brands this year coming out of Druids, and these are big cars.
Yeah.
And God, yeah, it reminded me of the Formula First days, but the Formula First days are a lot cheaper than these cars, really. I'm in a JPS Lotus, and I think it was a Tyrrell 012 that banged my wheels. I was like, oh, that's a bit big. Stop that.
Bit nerve-wracking, I bet. But also, I mean, the circuits as well. I mean, you mentioned Brands there in Spa. I imagine racing at Monaco in those cars is completely wild.
It's like someone's just got the scenery and just gone, that's it. You know, for me, I always go on about the view, which sounds really weird, but these cars have all got very good history and these tracks have got phenomenal history. So for me, obviously, Monaco's a fantastic experience. It goes very quickly, but the view is just bonkers. You know, like going into Casino Square and, you know, turning through there and then the tunnel and stuff like that is just really, really good. It's one of those where Monday comes around very, very fast. And I always say to my wife, Claire, like, I mean, did we really just do that? It's just everything's so quick. And I've done that now 3 times on the podium every time, but I still need that win. So next year, that's the plan.
Like the noise, the smell, the atmosphere as well. Like it's just like a time capsule almost, like completely takes you back to.
It is. And it's just when you're walking close to the track, you can hear it's alive already. You know, the atmosphere, everything. It's just, yeah, it's an incredible opportunity. I've been very lucky to do it. Last couple of years with Chrome Cars and Britec. And yeah, it's a lot of fun with those guys. And they run a lot of cars, the JPS collection, of course. So yeah, next year we hope for bigger things.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose is there sort of like a standout race that have had in those historic F1 cars that really stands out to you or?
Yeah, at Monaco, probably my first ever time I went there was 2014 and sorry, 15. And it was a delayed start. So the engine was overheating on the line. And I was qualified third. And it was overheating. I could see the needle like 110. I was like, oh, and they delayed it more and more. I was like, couldn't turn it off. So I was about to get out of the car. I was about to get out of the car because it was overheating. And I looked on the screen to my right, and I could see the camera had zoomed into the back of my car, and you could see the water coming out. And the worst thing I want to do is damage anything, damage the car or anything. But there was a slight conversation beforehand, and it said, you know, if there is any issues, just keep going, don't worry about it. But I thought, oh no, I can't overheat. So I looked at the marshal to my left, and I remember saying, I'm getting out. And he went, you sure? And I went, and then he let us go. So that was it. So I managed the car for 28 minutes and kept overheating, cooling down through the tunnel. It was getting really hot. And then I was having to short shift, cool it all down. And I finished third. So, and I went to pull in the pits a couple of times during the race because I think, oh, this is going to go bang any minute. And thank God it didn't. So yeah, I love a story like that. You know, it was quite stressful. I just remember looking at that water temp gauge for 28 minutes. That's all I remember. And then celebration after was quite good.
I bet. Why was it overheating so much in the tunnel? Is that just lack of airflow or just
Yeah, it
something
was a
rare
very
to
hot
nature?
weekend. It was really humid, and just through the tunnel, obviously it's real slow on the approach to that, so the temperature's quite high. And probably by the exit of the tunnel, it was cooling down a bit. But I just every time through the tunnel, thought, oh God, it's getting hotter and hotter. Yeah, so thank God it lasted.
Goodness me. And I guess obviously we just talk a little about Monaco and the theme continues with historic circuits because you're a pretty big name in the Goodwood scene. I watched you race the sort of Lola T70 Spider that you set a couple of lap records with. How does that sort of, rack up to you? Like, what are your experiences of racing at Goodwood been like?
It's been a real, like a dream come true, really, but true, really, because I've been teaching there since 1997 with Peter Gethin, and I'd always wanted to race there. And then I had one opportunity to do the mini race in 2009 in Dad's Mini, sharing with Richard Attwood. So I thought, right, this is my moment. I'm finally going to race at Goodwood Revival. And then the car blew the engine in qualifying. So that was that. End of. So then I had to wait another good few years. And I think it's really 2015, where Phil Hall, they gained a massive opportunity from him. Said, look, do you want to race my Lola T70? Like, really? Never driven it before. I went and did like 10 laps at Donington just to see what it was like. Scared myself absolutely crazy in that car. And then went to Goodwood. Put it on pole and won the race. So, you know, that was a dream weekend. It doesn't always go like that. But it's a great car. I'd love to buy that. If I won the lottery, that's the first car I'll be buying.
Oh, interesting. How come you love it so much? What's so special about it?
Just because it's so much fun to drive. It's really quick. Down the Lavant Strait, we're almost 170 miles an hour. And then when you look in the rearview mirror, you see all the fuel coming out of the trumpets. And that's just one of the rawest cars I've ever driven. Hats off to those guys who drove them properly in period, because the races were long. The safety wasn't fantastic and they were just so fast.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a great, great car that.
And racing it at Goodwood as well. I mean, if it's a scary car on any circuit, but it must be even scarier at Goodwood because of the sort of lack of runoff. Circuit hasn't changed much since the 50s, which is a great thing, but as a driver.
Yeah, you've got to treat the place with a lot of respect. If you do get it wrong there, it could be very, very big, touch wood. Also, it's not my car. So you've got to look after that car as well, and you don't want to drive into people and upset their weekend and piss them off. You go there with that in the mind, but also you want to drive quickly, you want to have a lot of fun, and you could win. That car there, the ultimate.
And I guess the other thing that you're very well known for at Goodwood is obviously the Goodwood Speed Week lap that you set in the Arrows A11. Could you sort of try and talk us through that lap from your point of view?
Yeah, dude, there's a bit of a story behind that actually beforehand. So Jean-Louis Rion bought the car, Kev Drew and Andy Thacker, and they sort of redid the car, and Chris Davies, to get the car up and running to do a demo at Brands Hatch. I think it was Auto Italia weekend or something like that. So we did the demo, and then Goodwood contacted us and said, do you want to bring the car to Speed Week? We're going to run this event, no crowds, but it'd be great to get the car out. Mm. So Jean-Louis was like, look, I can't fit in it. Do you want to drive it? okay. So we thought we were just turning up and doing a demonstration run. And then literally 3 days before, they said, no, we want you to do the outright lap record. I was like, okay, right, this would be good. So it was amazing. I had from the Shell building to, say, the exit of the chicane to warm my tyres up, mm-hmm. which is really just the rears. and the carbon brakes were just cold. So the first launch off the line, I thought, wow, that's good. I didn't stall it because it's quite easy to stall that car. But the first time into Madgwick was just, well, let's just turn and see. And it absolutely dug. And then once you feel that confidence of the car, that's it. You know, just keep it going. So flat through Ford Water with loads of sparks, which is great. And then on the run down to No Name, St Mary's Part 1, as people like to call it now, I was just left foot braking just to try and generate a little bit of temperature in the brakes for when I needed them for St Mary's Part 2. So yeah, my left leg was just trying to get over when my right foot was flat, and I was just breathing on that brake pedal to get them warm. That first run was pretty special. I think the second run we had a fuel issue problem, and the third run was good. Could have gone quicker, probably. No, but not much, but did I enjoy it? It was amazing. It's just a shame that we couldn't have the crowds there. Get why. And it was a great event to be involved in. I was in 7 cars that weekend. So it was a busy weekend. But, you know, when you listen to that car on that lap going around there, it sounds fantastic. And the commentator, Sam Hancock, he was loving it. It's a good friend of mine. It's great. It was just magical. I'd like to go back and do it again.
Absolutely. Well, I hope you get the chance. And like you say, that video that's on YouTube with Sam commentating is fantastic. I'll put the link to it in the written version of this interview so people can find it if they haven't seen it already. But he's getting so excited watching you fly around there. It's brilliant. And I guess, did you have a feeling once you'd crossed the line, like, okay, that was probably it? Like, you kind of knew going in that you would be able to set the record if the lap came together?
Not really, no. It was just drive it and just see, I think, which is probably the best way of doing it, rather than, you know, Kev and John Liu, you know, involved in the car. It wasn't like, oh, we've got to do this. It was just go and have some fun. Just drive the car, you know, don't be an idiot. Don't go off. Just push. And once you feel the tyres working, especially into the first corner, then you're like, oh, actually, yeah, I can push a bit more now. That's why Ford Water was flat. It's lovely going through there flat in that thing. Yeah, it's just confidence. The car gave me the confidence apart from the brakes, but the grip was really, really good.
No, it's interesting. And from a circuit point of view, I mean, we had Tiff Nadella on the other week, and he was talking about these old circuits, and particularly Goodwood, not having any runoff, but that actually being a great thing from a driver point of view, and being able to identify the brilliant drivers, because they can, you know, be that close to the barriers. Whereas if you've got runoff, then okay, most drivers can, you know, keep it flat through there, and you can't really notice much of a difference, sort of thing.
Right. And that's why I do a lot of my driver coaching there, because you have to be so accurate. There's only one line around there. If you come off line, then you could be in a bit of trouble. But it's a great place to coach, because you have to keep the speed up and just be so accurate and keep looking miles down the road. And then when it rains there, it's great because it's so slippery. And you have to go off and look for the grip and learn what to do. So yeah, it's a good place to be, and it's a nice drive there from here. So it's even better.
Absolutely, yeah. Some of the driving roads around Goodwood are brilliant. I guess you know, Goodwood sort of champions historic racing, and obviously it's something you've been massively involved in. Where do you see like the future of historic racing heading? Do you think it will become more mainstream?
I can see it just getting bigger and bigger. I think now. I think you're going to see a new generation of cars. I think 80s, 90s is going to get bigger. There might be a 90s Formula One series happening. The touring cars has always been popular. So the newer, sort of the 80s, 90s, 2000 touring cars, they're going to be the next ones.
Yeah.
I think Formula 3000, there needs to be a series for that, because that would be really cool. I think it's just getting bigger and bigger. And it's the noise, isn't it? It's the noise. The cars look good through the corners. They're moving around a fair bit. The events are nice. They're popular. I think the historic scene is just booming. Even in Europe with Peter Auto, because I'm racing that as well. I've been doing that for the last 4 years now. That the grids are huge. Yeah, I think in the HTC, which we drive a Group A BMW, we've always got sort of 40-plus cars in that, which is amazing. So yeah, it's booming, isn't it? It's good.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. I'm a huge fan as a spectator as well. You know, just to watch, it's a lot more, like you say, just the noise, the smell, the way the cars look. It's got a real sort of aura about it.
Definitely.
You sort of alluded to it there. I mean, another big part of what you do is driver coaching. I imagine that to be like a very rewarding process for both you as a coach and the person learning to drive. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it is. And I love it. I find it a real good challenge, and normally a productive day. You can walk away and go, right, brilliant, we found a second or whatever. But it's what I like is people buy these, let's say the historic race car. They've always wanted to buy this car, and they might have seen it racing. And then, right, I've got the car, and now I need to learn how to drive the car and be relatively, you know, competitive, but really more importantly, just safe. They're going to get round. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what I do. So anyone from just coming into historics or wanting to win the championship, then that's mainly my customers that I've been dealing with. And it's great fun. Then it's, you know, so go back to radicals, and a lot of the modern cars now have so much grip that you can just jump into them, feel the grip, that's it. But then you get into historics and the car doesn't stop moving around, even under braking. So you have to really teach, you know, look, this is giving them confidence that the car's okay when it's moving, because it's just moving on the sidewall, normally the sidewall of the tyre.
Right.
And it's explaining that, but demonstrating that with videos and data and everything else. So it's, I love it. It's really good. It's got a bit quiet now for the coaching, because obviously November, end of the season. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to getting that all back up and running in January.
Absolutely. Well, I'm looking at getting my race license next year, so I might be giving you a call.
Yeah, perfect. We'd do it. It'd be good. Absolutely. What are you going to race?
I haven't decided yet. I'm open to suggestions. And what would you recommend for someone who's looking to get into it?
I always say Mazda MX-5s and the Mark 1s, because the thing is, I think a lot of people think, oh, motorsport is so expensive. It is. But if you look for a cheap series and you race in that to learn your craft and try and do as much racing as possible on relatively little money, it's the way forward. Yeah. The Mark 1 MX-5s, they move around so much. I use a lot of those for the coaching I do, because they run on treaded tyres, they run all day, and they teach you so much. The racing can be a bit too close at times. That's why I'd never race one of them. I'd probably get beaten up. But it's just a brilliant tool to start off in.
And I guess from someone who hasn't experienced any of the coaching yet, what does it actually look like? Like, what is the sort of process towards making someone a better driver? Are you doing a lot of, in the car with them, or is it just primarily like video and data work, like you said? Or
yeah, I'm really obsessed with it. Once we get going, just to try and help as much as possible, is that I normally spend a lot of time in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
Which, once you get a bit faster, I decide to exit and get out of there. But it's, you can just see and feel so much from the passenger seat. So why wouldn't you? So once I've got them to a certain level, and I think they're going quite quick now, I go to the V-Box or a similar system and use that. It's very, very useful. And also corner spotting. Like, that's what Dad used to do for me in the carts back in the day. And it's still really good, because you can hear what they're doing and watch what they're doing, and then come back, tell them what's going on, and then go back out. Yeah. So there's a good few ways of doing it.
And have there been any hairy moments in the passenger seat?
Touch wood. There's been a few over the years. Yeah, obviously a few hairy moments, because we've got no hair. Whenever I'm in the car, I'm saying, look, just take it easy. Obviously, you're going to push. Take it easy and enjoy it. But just remember, I've got a busy week this week.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I asked this question to Ollie Webb, and I'm curious to see what your answer is to it, because he does a bit of driver coaching as well. And the question is there one standout technique or alteration of driving style that is most effective at making someone a better driver?
I would say it's the observation. Okay. Like, if you're looking miles down the road and you're planning everything a lot sooner, then you're going to learn a lot quicker. And then it's carrying that speed. It's carrying the speed into the apex. Once you've got that, then it's back on the throttle, and then it's trying to reach full throttle as soon as possible. Sounds easy, but it's not. Yeah. And smoothly as possible. So it's a mixture of the vision, the technique of rolling into the corner, keeping that speed up, and then you just keep improving from there.
He that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Ollie was quite big on the art of late braking, but I imagine that's quite a difficult one to teach. So how ballsy is
See, I'm not a late braker. I don't really brake that late, because I tend to give away all the secrets here, but I want to get off the brake. So I would brake relatively sooner, but then get off the brake earlier, take the speed in, then think about the throttle. So, okay, corners are different, but that's my sort of, I don't really brake major late.
Yeah.
Not that I remember.
And I guess, has your, obviously you're huge in historic world, has your love of historics filtered through to your own personal garage?
Yeah, but I don't have the money to buy some historic cars. I have the Mini Miglia, so that's my baby. But that's from like 1980. But then I have an E30 318 IS BMW road car, and then an old Mini as well. Just for my budget, that's where it is. And then I've got a few BMXs, which everyone takes the mick out of.
BMXs?
So I've got... I've just got a rally aero pro burner, which is wicked. It's the original from 1984. So
fantastic.
There is a Christmas ride that we're doing, and I'm gonna do it. So it goes into London, and then all the retro BMXs meet up.
Oh, fantastic.
I don't know what we do when we meet up, but and then I have another mag burner as well. So It's got to be done.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I grew up mountain biking, and I've got some lovely bikes at home. I've got a slopestyle bike and a dirt jump bike that I'm kind of obsessed with. So, I completely understand your obsession.
Yeah.
There.
It's great. And that's what I lived on my mag burner when Dad used to race. So when I finally got the Miglia, I did it in my dad's old colour scheme. And then I had to go and buy a rally mag burner. So every time I use a Miglia now, the mag burner's there. So, you know, stuff like that has got to be done.
I think there's a huge overlap as well between people who are interested in cars and bikes. I don't know if it's just like the fact that they've got wheels and then like there's just a sense of freedom that is associated with that. I think that was for me what it was.
I don't use the mag burner too much. Don't want to wear it out. You know, it's a big investment.
I have to find a picture of it and put it in the article. I can't really picture what they look like. I'm a bit before my time, maybe, but
'80s.
Okay, yeah, we are sort of coming up on time, so I was going to ask you a few quick fire questions, if I may. If you could race in any era in any category of racing, which would it be?
Can-Am, back in the sort of '60s, '70s.
Nice. Okay. Just because it's
And also, no, Super Tour is in 2000. So I'll have two there.
It's not really quickfire if I ask you to expand on them, but why is that?
Super Tour is what I grew up watching and just love the Super Tourers. And then the Can-Am stuff is because I love the T70 Spider so much.
Okay.
Just to go back and experience it with those legends and those tracks would be unbelievable. Really, really cool.
And what's your favourite circuit that you've ever driven?
Suzuka. So it was always Spa. Spa is still way up there. But then I went to Suzuka and I didn't do any sim work to learn the track. And I was just an idiot not doing that because it was so difficult. The first sector was so tricky. It took me a while to learn. Actually, it's a funny story. I arrived at Suzuka and I thought, right, I've got to walk this track. And it was at night and it was all floodlit. So I thought, well, that's handy. I'll go and walk the lap. And it's a big lap, as we all know. You see it on TV. So I got halfway round. I was like, oh, this is perfect. Then they turned the lights off. So I'm right over the far side. It was pitch black. And I did the rest of the lap with my iPhone torch just to try and get back. But it was so cool. It was a great event. I was driving a Fittipaldi F5A.
Oh, wow.
Max Smith Hilliard's car. And it was brilliant. I was on the podium there in that car. And it was a cool place. I'd like to go back there. It's really old school and so fast. And the crowds are brilliant. I had a long lost family there that I never knew I had. They wouldn't leave me alone all weekend.
Racing in Japan's huge. Like Tiff was spent a lot of his time racing in Japan, a big part of his career. And I haven't fully appreciated it, but it's crazy. Like it sounds really cool.
Yeah, and it was packed, and they were arriving like 6 a.m, and Mika Häkkinen was there to give out the trophies, and they were just hanging around the hotel waiting for him to go to breakfast. It was so cool to witness that. It's really good.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And then finally, what is your what's in your dream 3-car garage if money was no object?
Super Tourer. So I'd like the Nissan Primera. It'd have to be a Group C car.
Okay.
And it would have to be either the Mazda or the Silk Cut Jag. And then the other one, probably the V12 Aston GT3 car, raced a couple of times this year, the Bill Stein car, 2012, 13. Yeah, it'd have to be that, just for the pure sound of it and the look of it.
Yeah, fantastic. Great choices. I mean, they run those Silk Cut and Mazda cars at Goodwood. You should ought to try and get a go up the hill in one of those, I'm sure.
I've only driven one Group C, and that was a Nissan NTP 90, and I raced that at Dijon. And then, unfortunately, the owner missed the gear and blew the engine, so that was game over. But I want to do more Group C.
Okay.
Big hint there.
Yeah, take note. Yeah, no, that sounds fantastic. Well, yeah, unfortunately, that is all we've got time for, Nick, but it's been fantastic having you on. Thank you so much for your time.
That's all right. And thanks again. Thanks for reaching out, and hopefully, a few people found that interesting, and hope to see them all race very, very soon.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, Nick. Cheers.
Cheers.